Film Nerds Unlimited. Lo-fi movie conversations with high-quality movie connoisseurs. Ben Flanagan of AL.com. Ben Stark of Wonder Mill Films.
Morning, Ben.
Morning, Ben.
So, there's a topic that's been floating around that I've wanted to talk to another film nerd about for a while. It's something that Graham and Matt discussed and somewhat represented my opinion on in the review of Rogue One back in December. And that movie just hit Blu-ray here a few weeks ago. And it's a thing that probably isn't going anywhere for a while. So I figured we would talk about it now. It is the phenomena of movie makers creating digital actors. So in the case of Rogue One, they created digital versions of Peter Cushing as Grand Moff Tarkin and Carrie Fisher as Princess Leia. And they put these characters in these movies as if they're actors, and as if, you know, Peter Cushing, as he existed in 1977, was acting in the same scene as whoever else, as Ben Mendelsohn, for example. This is something that's been a little bit polarizing. Graham, I think, said that it was, you know, a cinematic or, an effects achievement on the level of Jurassic Park. Matt has said that it's necessary for Rogue One for it to be a seamless transition to Star Wars 1977. But I think that there's definitely arguments on the other side of things, and we may be more representative of that here today. So before we start, let me just say that we'll probably be talking about some details of Star Wars Rogue One, and then also Captain America Civil War, most likely, and Ant-Man. And there may be a few others, and maybe some speculation on future Star Wars movies or future movies. So before, you know, just in case anybody hasn't seen those movies and doesn't want to be horrified whenever these moments pop up to them, I want to throw that spoiler warning out. So just a top-level view, if a person on the street, some psychopath, walked up to you and said, "Hey, Ben, do you like it when actors are CGI in movies?" What's your answer? Like, what's your one-sentence answer?
No, it's stupid.
Yeah. I'm with you. I think it's stupid, and I think that there's a part of me that I won't totally argue this, but I think there's a potential for immoral. I think that when we start devaluing human lives to the point where they become digital assets for us to manage, I think that really is unkind to people that have passed.
So even if that's strictly when you're talking about resurrecting a dead actor and using their likeness to create a CGI face, right?
Somewhat, but also for aging, because, like, you know, it's okay that people age, and there are young actors and there are makeup artists that they could do good work with mimicking or with bringing out the qualities of another human face in their own way. And I think, yeah, so that's kind of my moral argument, is that, look, let people exist the way that they existed, and then let's use cinema to mimic and to reflect those things, not to clone or recreate them. You know, let something that is affected by time and finite, let it have its dignity rather than being, you know, put in stasis. I feel like that's a disrespectful thing to do to a thing. Does that make any sense? Yeah.
But for me, it doesn't even go that far. For me,
yeah, it usually doesn't for me either.
Yeah, it's strictly for me kind of an aesthetic thing, in terms of it has no value for me. I think it looks bad. It looks cheap. And I know that it's not cheap. I know that lots of money has been spent to create, master, and project this digital effect that, like Graham and Matt suggest, is supposed to be revolutionary for the industry. I don't see it as revolutionary. I see it as a waste of time. And it might depend on the story. You know, you might need it in some cases for whatever reason. You know, if the story calls for it, then you can make your case. If you're doing it just for the hell of it, just because you can, just because you think the technology is there, but it's actually very far away from being ready, it's a problem. And I'm going back on the timeline of, like, when I can remember this stuff starting to happen. And the first time I can really, like, think about it where they tried to CGI a person's face to make it look exactly like them was in 2001 at the end of The Mummy Returns.
Yes, yes.
When they created The Rock's face to look like the Scorpion King, this, like, scorpion-person hybrid thing. And it's the worst thing ever. It's, like, one of the worst special effects you've ever seen. It looks like the raw digital composite of where they started with the effect before it rendered 5 years later into the Rock's, what might look like the Rock's face.
Yeah, it's an animatic, what it looks like.
Yeah, and it hasn't come very far since, in my opinion. And, you know, the next time we saw it in a big movie, I think it actually got a little better. It was in 2006 with X-Men The Last Stand. During that opening scene where you see younger looking versions of Ian McKellen and Patrick Stewart. And, you know, back then I remember thinking, wow, that's amazing. And now we're having sort of the same discussion about the technology and how it's being applied to these movies and characters and the likenesses of these actors. You know, I don't think they've made a lot of progress. Like, it looked good for 2006, and it kind of looks the same 11 years later.
Yeah, I remember whenever that happened, people were like, wow, they can digitally de-age. We're right around the corner.
We're from getting Jimmy
Stewart in a movie, like resurrecting Jimmy Stewart. And as soon as, like, I started seeing, chatter like that, I was like, oh boy, like, here we go. Like, we can't have anything nice. And yeah, I remember being impressed by that in The Last Stand. And I definitely have less of an issue with that, but I can always still see the strings. And, it was, for me, I remember seeing The Mummy Returns, and that movie especially by the point that character shows up again, that movie is already slipping, you know, so it's not like you're totally bought in. But I remember when that moment came, because I'd heard so much about it, you know, that this was going to be this kind of revolutionary use of special effects integration. And then I saw it, and I my heart sank, and I was like, wow, this is bad. And that same summer, I believe, was Final Fantasy The Spirits Within, which was supposed to be this photoreal human CGI movie. And then I think I saw a trailer for that, and I was like, okay, this isn't working. And since then, I haven't really – I mean, obviously, there's the Polar Express that a lot of these people that are arguing so much for CGI actors and faces are big opponents of the Polar Express. But I like that movie. I like almost all of the Robert Zemeckis motion capture, let's almost make humans movies. But I'm not for one second saying that they work because of those CGI faces. I think they work in spite of them. And I think even he has realized that, okay, that was kind of a wild goose chase. So let me make some real movies again. So if our filmmakers are kind of throwing their hands up, then why are the rest of us still wanting this? And that's the thing for me, is like, why are we doing it? You know, it's the whole Ian Malcolm thing. And I think there is a Jurassic Park Frankenstein element to this, where it's like, we have this power, it's within our grasp to create life, to recreate the way that the soul flickers in a human eye on screen. And I feel like we were so caught up in whether or not we could, we never stopped and thought about whether or not we should situation. And I think that's what I'm getting here, is like, well, can we have a big, long discussion between all our movie studios and filmmakers and ask why we want to do this? Why are we chasing this seamless continuity thing in the case of Rogue One? or why are, you know, seamless de-aging in the case of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. We got it in Civil War and Ant-Man, and for whatever reason, it worked a little bit better in those movies for me.
It looked terrible
still,
in Civil War.
It felt like a little bit of a kick in the shins whenever Robert Downey Jr. pops up. And then
well,
that whole
like,
thing.
His mouth looked like a 1950s Mighty Mouse cartoon. Like,
it looked bad.
A Max Fleischer cartoon. That's the problem. That's the thing. Is like, everybody complains about the dead eyes of the Zemeckis movies and the mouths of these CGI renderings now. Like, it's just not ready. It looks like Grand Theft Auto video games, you know? Like, it looks as crappy as the Kevin Spacey character on the Call of Duty games or whatever. Like, it looks and sounds terrible, but it's a video game, so, and it looks enough like Kevin Spacey for you to think, oh, this is kind of like a movie. But it's not. It's a video game, and I'll never forget that. You know, and like, you bring up Jurassic Park, and it's like, you know, this brings up sort of like, we're hopping these different fences of hypocrisy here in terms of, on both sides of those fences, in terms of like something like Jurassic Park, where I can watch that and I can say, okay, look, I see that, first of all, I know dinosaurs they're not real anymore. They're no longer here. And they've had to utilize computer graphics to create dinosaurs again. And I can look in some scenes where there aren't practical effects and see those Gallimimuses are fake. I can see those raptors are fake. They're obviously CG. So does that bother me? Shouldn't that bother me as much as Princess Leia's face being fake at the end of Rogue One? Aren't those the same thing? I don't think they're the same thing, honestly, because, again, I think it depends on the story that you're trying to tell. Because, I mean, you can look at an old horror movie or whatever movie, and if they're using practical makeup or special effects, I can say, okay, werewolves aren't real, right? But that's really great makeup, and it works for the movie, it works for the character, it works for the creature that they're trying to create in this fantasy story that they're trying to tell. So why is that okay, and why is the Peter Cushing face not okay? You know, and there are a few different reasons the Peter Cushing thing is not okay, the immoral reasons that you mentioned earlier. But for me, what's even worse is that it looks like Sega CD.
The thing for me is that there's such a difference between a monster or a fake animal or a fake backdrop. There are all of these exotic things that we have to project our imagination onto in movies. And that's one of the fun parts of movies is, you know, suspension of disbelief and where how far we can go and what buys in. And if it doesn't buy in, what other elements have to be working really well for me not to buy in to it. And guess what work I don't have the capability psychologically to do that work on a human face, because a human face, in my opinion, is one of the most special and miraculous things on the planet Earth. And each one is different, and each one is so complex and so astoundingly capable of projecting so many things of emoting is the simple word that I need to find, emoting all of these different things. And I can't apply suspension of disbelief to a person that I'm talking to, you know? And that's the problem, is that in Rogue One, you have fake Peter Cushing talking to real Ben Mendelsohn, and psychologically, I can't take their emotion seriously because Ben Mendelsohn is talking to Peter Cushing like he's not fake, but guess what? He's fake, and I can tell he's very fake. And that's the thing. I think it's a psychological thing where I remember Graham said that I believe his fiance walked out of the movie and had no clue that that was a fake person. And I think my wife was the same way. And there's other people that have said, oh, I can't see the difference. But I think that's fine, but I think we have to go with the baseline expectations of people that watch movies all the time, you know, huge film nerds. And if it passes that test, then okay, it's working. And if it will never pass that test, which is my argument, that we will never be able to recreate the complexity of a human face. And if we do, we failed already because we spent billions of dollars doing something that didn't need to be done to begin with. But we need to go off of the standard of the people that are going to call it, I think, the first. And yeah, I mean, it's one of those things too, where it, like you said, the motion is part of it. I've looked several times to try to make fun of this thing. I've tried to find stills of Peter Cushing in Rogue One. And guess what? I have a really hard time. In fact, I probably, in a blind comparison, I may not be able to tell you which is fake and which is real if you compared a shot from Rogue One to a shot of Star Wars 1977. But guess what? Once you put motion on it, I can tell you immediately, because the way that light bounces off of eyes and the way that muscles work in the face and light bounces through skin, it's all a miracle, and you can't fake it, and I can tell. And especially with Peter Cushing, he's got a craggy face, you know, he's got wrinkles and he's in darkness, and you know, it works easier for him. But then later on in the movie, you've got a brightly lit 20-year-old Carrie Fisher with like this China doll thing going on, and it's much worse. So I think there's degrees too of it not working. I remember in Rogue One, the first time we see Peter Cushing, he's reflected in a window, and I knew that was CGI, but I thought, well, wow, that's brilliant. Like hiding the CGI in a reflection. And if this is the only scene we get this character in, what a great way to honor his legacy, to recreate the feeling of being in the room with this character, without going whole hog into this CGI recreation. And then he turns around and like into a brightly lit close up. And I was like, oh, this is a nightmare immediately. And that's what happens every time. And it comes down to, again, I could go down all my philosophical rabbit trails, but this, at the end of the day, it comes back down to what you're kind of starting and ending at, which is it looks bad and I can't get past it.
Yeah, it starts and stops there for me, and I'm trying to do my best here to come up with examples where this works okay, and I think there's a director who did his best with it, and that's David Fincher. So in 2008, he makes this movie, The Curious Case of Benjamin Button. I'm not a big fan of that movie. You know, I can acknowledge that there are some interesting special effects in it, but you go back and watch the scene where you have, you know, 18-year-old Brad Pitt show up in a scene with Kate Blanchett. And Fincher clearly knew that the technology wasn't ready, because the actor, the quote-unquote actor, the Brad Pitt character, is shrouded in shadow in that sequence. So you get like a hint of what much younger Brad Pitt might look like in 2008. And he just keeps him there. And he also does that, you know, he tries to seamlessly work that in for story purposes too, where it's like this guy's sort of got to stay in the shadows. He's sort of hiding from the character he's hesitant to reveal himself to. So here he is in the shadows. Also, it's because the special effects aren't ready. But then in 2010, you know, you have the big story about Armie Hammer playing two different characters using this facial technology. I don't think anybody knew Armie Hammer was just one guy, right? Like, I think everybody thought the Winklevoss twins was played by two different guys when they saw
it. Right, but that wasn't a head created out of CGI. That was composite.
Well, it's composite, but I'm just saying, like, you're using CGI to create a totally new character on the body of somebody else, which is not... It's similar to what they did with Cushing,
similar.
Right? Where it's very similar. No. So I'm just saying, like, there are ways to...
No,
make
because in that situation, Armie Hammer's real face was doing the performance.
Yeah,
it was just
they
digitally chopped his head off.
There are moments where it does look wonky, I'll say.
Okay.
Especially
right.
You know, when they're in the same shot together, or like I think you can see it during like rowing sequences, especially in The Social Network, where like the face turns a certain way and it's just like, oh, well, that's not a face. That's a monster face, or it's just CGI, you know? So, yeah, and then you look at something like Terminator Salvation, which terrible, and they recreated Arnold Schwarzenegger for this really weird sequence. And, look, a Terminator's not real. It's fake, and it's legit synthetic flesh, and it's a cyborg. And so, okay, there's your out for why it might not look good. And then, right. you know, several years later, they tried it again in Terminator Genesis, and it still looked pretty weird. It looked better,
looks
I
like
guess.
Ang Lee's Hulk. Yeah, it looks like Ang Lee's Hulk.
Yeah,
that's what I thought.
It looked pretty weird, and even worse, because, like, you know, one of my you know, the option here, especially in the case of Peter Cushing or whatever, is just recast it, you know? Like, if the guy sounds like Peter Cushing and has a similar build, you know, there are pretty good makeup people in Hollywood. Just try to make him look like Peter Cushing's character, you know? Just recast the role. And let
it's worked for 100 years.
Right. Let the great human actor act like the character that was in Star Wars, and you'll be okay. But, you know, that can go wrong, too, like it did in Terminator Genesis when they recast, like, for instance, Bill Paxton's Hook character. So you have both things happening at once, where you have totally CGI Arnold Schwarzenegger facing off against recast Bill Paxton, because Bill Paxton couldn't play his young punk self. And then the young punk, the guy who plays the young punk in that movie is absolutely horrible and delivers the lines like that Bill Paxton brilliantly did. You know, it's as much younger self. He delivers them horribly. So, you know, you got to do your part to cast it correctly if you're going to recast. And this makes me think of, for one example here, like you said, they've been doing this for 100 years. One example here, I go to the movie Stand By Me, right, where you have a child and then an adult version of the same character, right? So, like, today, instead of Will Wheaton playing the kid Gordy, the lead in this movie, and Richard Dreyfuss playing the older character, like, today, like, either one of those would have been a digital rendering of the other. You know what I mean? Like, so Gordy would have either had, like, Richard Dreyfuss, CG Richard Dreyfuss features, or Richard Dreyfuss would be, like, an adult whose face you never see because they've digitally recreated Will Wheaton's face on top of it, you know, instead of those two actors embodying the same character, you know? Like, that's what's so depressing about this, is that, like, you think about these movies that applied, you know, logic back then, if they're made today, they're overthought. And that's the whole thing. Like, that for me, that's like the fundamental problem with all this, is that it's just people overthinking this instead of just trying to tell a story and trying to, you know, embody character. That's what's more important here. Like, that's what's going to connect with people. It's not going to distract people, which is what the CGI crap is doing. And that's what bothers me.
Yep. It's in The Dark Knight, whenever Maggie Gyllenhaal is playing Rachel Dawes instead of Katie Holmes, you have one person say, "Hey, Rachel," and you see that it's not Katie Holmes, and you're like, "Oh, what? Well, that's weird." Okay. And then you the rest of the movie, she's Rachel Dawes. Whereas in this situation, it's somebody telling me this is Tarkin over and over and over again, and I'm shielding my eyes because I'm scared that a demon is on the screen. And that's, yeah, I mean, you mentioned some times that it worked really well. And again, I remember this this exact moment in the theater when I saw Tron Legacy. And at the beginning, they have a digital Jeff Bridges come in, and he's shot first in shadow and then over the shoulder. And it sounds just like him as he was in 1982. And the kid is acting really well off of him. And I thought in the theater, I thought, this is a really clever use of this technology. You know, you use CGI to fill in the gaps of the stuff you can't do, but you don't ever make it, you know, the number one thing on screen. And I thought, this is really brilliant. Joseph Kosinski is really doing a great job here. And then we get, he says something to him, and again, fake Jeff Bridges turns into camera, and I was horrified, just horrified. Kill it with fire is my reaction.
I wish there was a job in Hollywood where it was one guy in all of Hollywood, right, where he's like the CGI face czar, and his word is law, and they call him in when they've done the CGI effects. So, like, if it's the beginning of Captain America Civil War, he watches the beginning of it, and they show him the scene, and then it goes off, and then they look to him, and then he just goes, "It's not ready."
Yep.
And then they just move on, and they go back to the drawing board, or they figure something else out.
Or they shoot it.
And then the next time they come back with Ant-Man, and they come back with Rogue One, and they show him the scene with Peter Cushing, and then he watches it, and it's over, and they look over to him, and he goes, "He's not ready." Uh-huh. And then they do it again a million times before they figure out, oh, this was all a terrible idea all along. Let's never do it again. Sorry, CGI czar guy, you're fired because you're no longer needed because we're never doing the CGI face stuff again. So yeah. Now we know we're just never going to be ready.
Yeah, that's the best case scenario. And I like, right. I like that guy, and I feel like he should not live in L.A. He should probably live in Scranton, Ohio, and work at a, well, I don't know, wherever he can. He's a movie nerd, you know, but he is not the L.A. movie nerd that sees a billion things and is in the studio system. They need to, like, right. you know, drop ship him in whenever they need to do one of these. I like that idea a lot. But, yeah, it's frustrating. The idea that, you know, the best part of making a movie in some cases, and some of the greatest movies of all time, have been made under the circumstances where there are tremendous limitations. And the art of filmmaking has always been, a big part of it, has always been working within your limitations. And this studio refusal to do that, to pour billions of dollars into this technology that is flawed from the get-go, is so frustrating, because what could we be using this money for? You know, could we be buying more extras so that we don't have to do digital extras, or building bigger sets so that we don't have to do fake sets? No, what we're doing is we're making everything a digital asset so that we can control it. And it's this bizarre need for control. And going back to the moral argument that this probably won't happen, but there is totally, it's a totally believable thing now for whenever a character, an actor gets cast as Superman or whoever, the studio knows they're going to need that guy in 20 years. So we're going to scan this guy with an Xbox scanner, and we're going to have his digital person in this computer so that we can use this as a bargaining chip when it comes to negotiating contracts in the future. It's all leverage. It's all control. I don't think that's the case now. I don't think it probably won't ever be. But at the same time, the motivation is still there. It's the same as shooting everything on green screen or not shooting on location. It's this unhealthy obsession with making things look controlling and perfect. And now it's being used in a really insidious way, in my opinion. It's being used as fan service. You know, it's being sold to fans as you don't have to do any work to believe that Princess Leia is in this movie because it looks like Princess Leia. And it makes the people viewing the movie so much lazier. And again, there's a hypocrisy there, because in Rogue One, they're recreating digital Princess Leia, but are they recreating digital Han Solo? No, because they don't have enough money, and because that would be a nightmare. So they're recasting Han Solo. So sometimes it's
just
okay,
stupid.
But then other times, sometimes it's okay to be, it's just as stupid and for totally different reasons. What I'm
right.
saying is sometimes it's totally okay for it to be seamless, and then other times it's totally okay for us to use suspension of disbelief. And I'm just saying, use suspension of disbelief all the time. Use CGI as a supplement to bridge the gap as much as you can. Do not
put
the spotlight on CGI.
It's simple. Don't need CGI.
It's the same thing as in all special.
Yeah.
It's the same thing as in any kind of use of CGI, is you build on top of things. You don't, you know, create things out of thin air.
Yeah. Don't need CGI. Got real people.
So mad.
Yeah. Like, got real
people.
People. You know?
Real.
So,
yeah.
Cats,
yeah, dinosaurs?
Them.
Not real.
Yeah. And I know that we talked about this ad nauseum on about Rogue One, but like the end of Rogue One, like, you remember when there were simple solutions on movie sets? Or not even simple solutions, but I mean, it's like sometimes like the most obvious thing is what you should do. And at the end of Rogue One, who has one of the most famous haircuts in movie history? Princess Leia does. And if we saw
the
back,
I would argue
the
most famous haircut.
Yeah. We saw the back of her head, it might have been even better. You know, like, we would have known
it
was
been.
Princess Leia because of the most famous movie haircut ever, instead of embarrassing yourself with the bad CG. Like, it's simple. Like
it ruins
the
movie.
Lots of things ruin the movie, but that was probably
that's my lasting image. That's
yeah.
When I walked out of the movie theater, all I thought was about this monster image that I just saw.
Yeah,
it's a nightmare. It's a nightmare. Yeah, I'm just getting riled up at this point. But yeah, I think for me it just comes back to, yeah, it's use what you have at your fingertips. Again, using the whole if it was done today, if Jaws was being made today, Spielberg would shrug his shoulders, not shoot the shark, and in the final cut of the movie, there would be digital sharks flying out of the water. There would be a bigger digital shark flying through the air. There would be a digital ship. There would be digital Roy Scheider as a boy thinking about how scared he was of water, because we have to show these things and beat people over the head with a frying pan and hold their hand because we can't trust the audience. It's so frustrating, and it's such a waste of money. You're just throwing money away.
Meetings there have probably been of, like, you know, what prequel can we do? Okay, let's do the Clint Indianapolis speech. Let's make that movie. Let's do Roy Scheider. Let's do Jaws: Rise of the Water Fear. You know, like let's do Hooper.
Let's do Richard Dreyfuss.
Let's do Rise of the Learning How to Tie Boat Knots. What else can we do here? There'd be CGI.
The time
boat
he
knot.
Made the shark cage.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Let's do a whole movie about what happened between him, the shark attack, and him reappearing at the end of the movie. What happened to Hooper during that, you know, 20-30 minute span, or
off
screen? Let's make a 2.5 hour movie
mermaids.
About when he's underwater and what all happened. And then at the end, he's going to swim up to the surface, and we're going to digitally recreate Roy Scheider's face, and we're going to have our movie. And it's going to be right before they blow up. It's going to be right before they blow up the shark. But I guess he blows.
Which
I mean,
will
I
be three times
shark,
as long and more
then,
expensive.
And then Richard Dreyfuss appears, right? So,
right.
God Almighty! Yeah, exactly. Like, this is just straight up jaded nonsense. I know, but you know, you mentioned using it for a moral, or you know, even not nefarious purposes. You know, like I wouldn't go that far. But I mean, you even think of something like Furious 7 when they supposedly digitally recreated Paul Walker. And look, to that movie's credit, I didn't notice it really. Like I was, you know, sometimes I would look for it because I had heard that it happened. But I just didn't really, like, you could kind of tell where it was like, okay, there's a shot of the back of Paul Walker's head, you know, where, like, that's obvious. That's rather obvious.
Nope,
but
there's
never really
one shot. There's one shot. Yeah, there's one shot where, I was kind of looking for it, and then I forgot about it, you know, because when the scene starts, they're on the beach, and they use his twin brother, I think, to do some stuff, and I was like, this is all working pretty well for me. And then there's the final moment where, If it had just been Vin Diesel looking over at Paul Walker's car, and then we cut to the wide shot of the white car driving off, you know, to a different road, which is a really beautiful cinematic image. If we had just done that, it would have been, wow, this is a legitimately heart-tugging moment of this franchise that, you know, you would never think would have that. But no, they put in a shot of, like, a backlit, fully sunlit shot of Paul Walker robot smiling at Vin Diesel, and it's atrocious, and it ruined it.
I didn't know if that was just, like,
for me,
you know,
because it was
stock footage that they had or something of Paul Walker. I couldn't tell that was CG necessarily.
It may be, but they used like digital. Yeah, they used some sort of digital something to move his eyes or make him smile or do something. It's just, wow, what are you doing? What are you doing?
Well, I guess, you know, like that. That's again, they're like art. There are conversations within conversations or problems within problems here, because, I mean, you know, that's not that unlike Brandon Lee and The Crow, right, where they had to recreate some Brandon Lee stuff. Or even, like, you can go even further back and with Plan 9 from Outer Space in terms of, like, let's recreate Bela Lugosi without it actually being Bela Lugosi. Like, let's make this guy cover up the bottom of his face so that people think it's him. Or, like, again, with The Crow, let's use the footage we have and let's use doubles and recreate this dead person so that we can finish our movie, you know? So now they're just doing that
right.
with CG. Or in the case of Furious 7, that's exactly what they did. But with Peter Cushing, he's been dead a long time, you know? So it's like now we're just doing it just because we, again.
Yeah,
it's
you
like
didn't have a problem to solve.
Right. It goes straight. Right. You're right. It's problem solving. We started this. We have to finish it. And we want to do it in a way that pays as much respect to the late actor as we can, but you know we're in a financial bind here, and we have to finish what we started. But with the Peter Cushing thing, it goes back to the fundamental issue of it's because we can do it. And again, it's like it's simple, but it's like just because you can doesn't mean you have to, and that's an axiom that should be applied to movies now. And that's the thing. It's like, just because you can doesn't mean you have to. And the big question you should be asking yourself is, how does this help my movie? And how does this tell my story? How does this make my movie any better? And why does this make my movie any better instead of just casting a real person to play that role?
How does it make my movie better? How does it hurt my movie? Because, again, and I'm kind of going in circles here. With Rogue One, the best thing I can say about the Robert Zemeckis movies, or even Ant-Man to a certain degree, is that these are slick, cartoony kind of popcorn, you know, very, very high gloss. There's a sheen to everything. And it kind of works for the aesthetic of the movie. But with Rogue One, you start with these incredible real locations, and it's all about this documentary feel. It's like you're selling me the Battle of Algiers, and then all of a sudden you throw in this creature, the CGI creature, and it totally takes me out of the movie because you've been spending an hour explaining how everything here is real, and then you show me something that's totally fake, and it's frustrating. And again, it's frustrating from the filmmaker standpoint of not being committed to that organic unity of how do we make everything look as real as we can make it. But it's also frustrating from a fanboy perspective who have spent, you know, a decade now or more complaining about all the CGI in the prequels. But then when you get CGI Tarkin, everybody is celebrating it and it makes no sense. And it's this hypocrisy of, well, if you give me all this fake new stuff, I don't like it. But if you give me the fake thing that makes me feel comfortable and allows me to lie to myself that these things aren't, you know, aged or dead, then I'm okay with it. And it's a dishonesty with yourself at the end of the day. You know, you're having to tell yourself, ooh, this looks good. I promise this looks good. And it doesn't. It just doesn't.
Can the next episode be about using people who have aged 40 years to play the same voice role as they did 40 years ago, like James Earl Jones did in Rogue One, and how Peter Cullen does for Optimus Prime with all these Transformers movies, where it's like, you know, James Earl Jones was playing the same character at the same moment of time when he was 45 years old, and now he's doing it as an 85-year-old man. It sounds like Darth Vader has aged 40 years suddenly, even though this is happening before we saw the 1977 version. You know, it's like, what the hell are you people thinking?
Yep.
Like,
Vader just went for a jog. But guess what? I'm willing to suspend my disbelief. I mean, it doesn't hurt me that bad. But yeah, it's definitely a thing. And yeah, I don't know where I heard this. But some podcast was joking that they probably have James Earl Jones locked in a vault right now, recording every word in the English language so that they can eventually, you know, keep his voice and patch it together for future Darth Vader movies.
And they should have done that 40
years ago.
Because
then they've got everything, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess so.
That's where I'm like, again, recast it, you know? Like,
yeah.
Recast it.
If you have to, like, keep going back and redo, or hell, you know, how's this? Let's just not put Darth Vader in a movie anymore. Let's just agree that Princess Leia and Darth Vader were these special characters timelessly created in 1977, and they ran their course, and we can't tell stories about them anymore. And guess what? We have to take this universe that is so rich and so big, and we have to make movies about characters that we can't, and make the universe richer with new characters, like they did with Force Awakens.
I was already pretty angry before the CGI Leia thing because of the Vader scene that preceded that. Like, I know that there are people out there who freaking love it, and they like seeing Vader be this big badass. I thought it was a big mistake. Like, I thought it was totally against character, and I thought that whole thing was a big waste, and I was already in a bad mood, and then the CGI Leia face thing happened, and then it was just like, all right, well, I guess we're just done here.
Yeah, Kent, where's the parking lot? I'm ready to leave. Yeah, I mean, and again, it goes back to the, ooh, but everything has to be seamless. It's so frustrating because, yeah, everything is so seamless when this guy is doing backflips and throwing people around and tearing things apart. And then, theoretically, the door opens and he limps out like who's the guy that played him? It's not Peter Mayhew, but whoever played Darth Vader in Star Wars 70. Yeah, yeah. He just kind of, like, hobbles out, and his mask is kind of, like, rotate, like, wiggling on his head. It's like, no, that guy did not just do CrossFit in that hallway.
Exactly.
With trooper guys. You know, he did not move that way. And we don't see him move that way at all, ever, until the prequels. And so this idea that it has to be seamless it's ridiculous. It's, yeah, you're telling me that he aged, he went back to 1977 mobility in the course of a sliding door opening.
I think it was an honest trailer that pointed out, like, it makes the next movie, the 77 Star Wars, like, fight where he fights Obi-Wan Kenobi, look even dumber now, you know, like, because they literally, like, stand there.
Yeah.
And
yeah, he should be throwing him around like a rag doll.
Right.
Or they should be, like, bouncing off of walls. Yeah.
Right.
Like, yeah, I'll give him that. It's yeah. If we're going for seamless, but guess what? How about we just don't go for seamless? And how about we use our imagination to, if we need to bridge a gap with our imaginations rather than having to see intimate details of everything just off the page of our childhood classics.
Oh, and you know what would have made the Leia thing seamless? Back of her head.
Yeah. Yep. It's a lot easier to recreate a wig than
CG.
Human face, which is very complex.
Don't need CG. Got real people.
Yep. And again, I'll try to end with this. The my go-to scene here is from a movie that's not necessarily great, but pretty good. It's the Tom Hooper Les Mis adaptation, where we have a long close-up of Anne Hathaway singing the song, you know, as she's suffering. And we will never be able to create that scene in CGI. You will never be able to evoke the feelings of that scene or what's going on in that scene with CGI. So why bother? You know, like that, if we can't get to the depths of human emotion with this technology, why bother?
I'm surprised we didn't come up with a different scene.
Okay.
Well,
look, I'm saying, like, that scene totally works for me. I don't have any attachment to Anne Hathaway, but you get a close up or you know the Alex Kittredge's mother in Jaws, you know, who's a lot of her performances in close up or any, you know, or freaking Passion of Joan of Arc, you know. If you can't give me digital Falconetti, then you're wasting your time, because that, right? Shouldn't that be the end goal here? Or is our end goal only these little fun tricks in summer movies?
What's the best example of this, like them applying this technology to a movie? What's the best they've done so far?
The best in terms of they made it work, or the best? Like,
yeah, the, just like the best line. So, like, out of the 10 or so examples that we've seen so far, which gets the best grade, even if it's still a fail?
I guess I would say the Tarkin reflection in Rogue One, because it was so brilliant, but then they spoiled that. So I guess I'll say young Michael Douglas in Ant-Man.
Oof. All right.
But I don't even remember that, so I'd really have to take a look at that. I'm probably being more generous than I should be there. But I remember thinking, oh, that's neat, and then moving on.
Well, it's
but
Marvel,
it's
so yeah, you're being more generous
than you should
be.
At the beginning of the
movie.
Yeah. I am. I'll honestly, again, there's an aesthetic to Marvel that I'm willing to, okay, fine, we have a fully digital face Hulk. You know, you're not telling me that this is all super real. But, yeah, but I'll also be honest and say that, yeah, why could you not have cast somebody that looked an awful lot like Michael Douglas and played young? Yeah, that would have been fine. Would have been fine with that. It didn't make Ant-Man any better to have fake Michael Douglas in that scene.
No, for sure. Cast a teenage Tony Stark,
right,
too. You know? Like, look, I mean, they did it in Marvel.
Yeah,
they did
there you
it
go.
In Marvel anyway. They like with what's his name? What's Howard Stark with John Slattery and the
yeah,
Dominic
Slattery,
Cooper?
Or,
you know,
yeah,
like
and,
you did it.
Dominic
you did it.
West. Or, yeah, yeah.
Dominic Cooper, you did it.
You did
know?
It.
Like
you guys, it's right here.
God.
All right, I think we're good.
For Film Nerds Unlimited, go to filmnerds.com or find us on Facebook and Twitter. If you like what you hear, rate and review our podcast on iTunes. Keep an eye out for the next issue of Film Nerds Unlimited, coming soon.